Good Saturday to you. It's KJ here on WEEI 617-779-7937, taking you up to the ACs, the Big East final, St. John's and Creighton. That's coming up here in a couple hours. So Rafael Devers showed up to work today with a smile and a huge whiff against Chris Sale. I mean, think about all these years we've been like, man, Chris Sale looked great today. Like, Chris Sale, like, went longer than his recent starts when he was last with the Red Sox. But Rafael Devers is back. And look, there's a great article at Mass Live that I just read from Sean McAdams just from a couple days ago. Just check it out. It gives a little bit of the behind the scenes of what has transpired in this Rafael Devers situation, including talks of him actually going to the team for a trade. But really, the overall belief is that Devers has no cards in the deck that he could play against the team because he's got that gargantuan contract that he just signed last year. And Bregman is really a year-to-year rental, right? Like, Bregman is the guy that you can charge month-to-month rent versus saying, hey, we can give you a deal on your rent if you sign for 2 or 3 years. Of course, minus the realtor fee, the first and last month's rent, and your mom's maiden name, that's going to cost you at least 75% of the deposit. But Rafi does have a card to play, right? Because what if other players want to come here if Bregman leaves, right? Because here's, as much as we want Bregman to have this great season, and that's ideal because he answers the right-handed bat. He answers the better glove at third. But what it may also answer for Bregman, and I don't think we really want to have this conversation, is it could get Bregman the $45 to $50 million a year that he wants. And I don't know if the Red Sox are the team to say, okay, because of what you did last year, we'll give you 50. And then he says, okay, I'll do that for 1 year and then negotiate again. I think Bregman is kind of looking at this as possibly a jump-off situation. And guess who would then suddenly be the third baseman again if Bregman's gone? Rafi, who just showed up to work today with a smile. I don't know if you heard this, but Rafi said, actually, there was nothing wrong with his shoulder. He just wanted to get himself acclimated on some swinging and hitting things that he wasn't able to address before spring training starts. Follow me here, 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. See, if Rafael Devers is the third baseman again next year, do you think if Vladimir Guerrero is considering the Red Sox and he makes a phone call to Rafael Devers, his fellow Dominican, do you think Rafi is giving a ringing endorsement? Do you? Do you? Last time I was here, I told you, look, Bregman is a historically slow starter. I'm now thinking what Rafael Devers has had up his sleeve is damn near genius from a psychological perspective. Because if Rafi did all this fighting and was like, you know, I'm not happy, and he still continued on, because I still don't think he's happy about the situation. But if he continued on and he struggled and everything just absolutely folded badly for this guy, everybody can say it all started with his attitude. But what if he comes in with a good attitude? And look, history shows that Bregman hits career just under 270. That's kind of what he does, that or above in spring training. And then in the first months over the last 3 years, it's like 217, 220, 215. I do wonder how that translates. No, it's a good thing that the series starts in Texas. At least you see some of that Houston heat at Texas Heat. But how does that translate when you get to April games in Fenway? And you've always either been playing in a dome, or most of your games have either been on the West Coast or in a covered stadium, right? Like, it's Trevor Story, right? Remember we said this about Trevor Story? Hey, man, you look really good a mile up in the air. How do you do 8 feet above sea level? At this point, it hasn't turned out very well. For Rafi, you play nice, you smile, you can get away with starting off the season hitting 240 as a DH, and nobody can scream a thing. Now, I would be the one saying, see, this is why you should have had this all addressed. I never believed that you were going to give Bregman all that money to just play second. There was just no way. I was like, there's no way you're going to pay Bregman third baseman money and turn him into the highest base, second baseman in the league. Like, I just knew that was not going to happen. And the way that Kass is looking, you almost feel like, damn, if we even think about trading this guy may become an MVP on another team and we look really dumb, all to appease Rafael Devers. But Rafi does have a couple of cards he can play. And one of them is, hey, Bregman, have the greatest year in the history of man. Please. Because some other team is going to give you all the money in the world that you want, and guess who's got to come back and have a conversation with me? The Red Sox. 617-779-7937. That is also the text line. Still to come in about 15 minutes. Guess who isn't coming to dinner again? This is, I don't know why the word wide receiver in New England just seemed to not mesh. It's going to be interesting. That's in 15 minutes. And I've got a surprise for you here in like 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Shocking. So look, the Red Sox, I think when you look at them in the field, you're like, okay, this is a capable defending team in the field. How do you have, again, I ask, Yoshida at 19 a year, Devers at 30, $49 million at DH. If you can't move Yoshida, like you would have already done it. Maybe some teams need to see how he's doing in spring training, if he's come through the injuries. I totally get that. But at some point, something has to be made. Rafi take some ground balls at second. But Rafael Devers has handled this okay, I think. I think he's handled it okay. Silence allows people to not assume what's coming out of your mouth. And then, check out the McAdams article at Mass Live. It's pretty interesting. I think it's dated the 14th. So what, today's 15th? So yesterday. See, it feels like I read it a couple days ago. I think sometimes when you get, like in this industry, you kind of get like advanced copies of stuff. Like you're like, okay, actually I stole someone's login and that's how I was able to say it. But check it out because it really paints a picture of, hey, there's a lot more that was going on underground than what we saw above ground. And the reason why we didn't see too much above ground because Rafi was really not around to answer questions. Wasn't out there. Like, because here's the other part. What if he's out there struggling as the DH all spring? What do you think the question and answer session would be? It'd probably make for a great baseball isn't boring podcast with Bradfield because for sure, something gets thrown, I think, just out of frustration. But sometimes when you're not physically inside that frustration situation, it allows for you to start to kind of think about what you're moving. Because, look, the Red Sox are never going to say, Rafi, we're just going to let you go. Like, Shohei Ohtani probably has to be the returning name if you're even going to take the phone call about Rafael Devers leaving. So when Devers went to management, as it's alleged, that he wanted out or seek a trade, they're probably like, go see the batting cage. You're not going anywhere. That's the control now. But, of course, the team would want Bregman to have a great season and stay. And I'm thinking, Bregman is thinking, I'm going to have a great season and leave. I mean, this guy's pretty much signed like 3 1-year leases. Like 3 years of month-to-month leases. That's kind of neat for him. But it would put some control back in Devers' hands as things go by. So, look, Chris Sale can make you look pretty bad in an at-bat. That's how bad Rafi looked early on. But it will be fascinating. That if Rafael Devers, let's say, starts off the season hitting 230, 240, but Bregman does his usual last 3 years of 217, 220, 231, stuff like that. If the heavy is going to be on Devers and not on Bregman, because if the heavies is on Devers and the noise gets loud about him not being just able to hit, let me tell you, one of the hardest things that I've, from my understanding of major league players that I've known over the years from living different places, one of the hardest things to do is just get up off of a chair and go hit. that is very hard. If you look at some of the greatest DHs in the modern era, these are guys who were coming out of the field and they believed that these bats were so valuable, later in their career that they needed a place for them. Remember, the DH was really just created in baseball just so that way you wouldn't have a bunch of guys hitting 132 at the bottom of the – it was always a bunt or sacrifice situation. It's like, oh, gosh. Now it's not necessarily bad the way baseball is going now. But usually a DH is a person who's in their last years. Like, if I'm thinking around the time where Jim Rice is platooning with Mike Greenwell, right? Rice's bat was still super, super valuable. But, of course, this guy's beyond the MVP years, beyond the damn near Triple Crown winning, I think back in 81 or 78 or something like that. I'm just giving you a historical perspective. But the idea is, you usually don't become a DH in Major League Baseball in your prime. 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. Also got to get to what's coming down the pike with the Celtics, because after what I saw Thursday, look, the Nets game is about to tip off at 6. But after what happened with the Oklahoma City game, the Celtics should not lose another game for the rest of this month. Maybe one. I'll tell you what that is. All right, so you ready for the surprise? So I get a text today, and I'm eating my lunch. And as I'm eating my lunch, I realize I have to eat my lunch faster because the baseball game is moving faster. I get a text and says, hey, we've got to switch some people off behind the scenes. So can I reveal in trending, as I'm about to go to it, the surprise of who my producer is right now? This is absolutely, can I do this? It's time for trending with Ken Laird.
WEEI Afternoons, yes! With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
What a nightmare, KJ.
It's beautiful.
Here we are.
And hurry up with the trending, Ken. This is great.
How do you work thing?
When does one get to have their boss work for them? Like, You can't tell me. Well, you can tell me no, but you can't tell me no.
Well, it's spring break, and some of the young producing staff got the spring break.
Fire
flu, but that's fine. That's fine. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else. Here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. Red Sox fell in spring action today. You just heard it wrap up here on WEI. JetBlue 7-3 Braves. Rafi Devers 0-3. Willier Abreu 0-2 in their spring debuts. We did have, though, KJ, Tristan Casas going yard. Here's what that sounded like.
There's a swing and a drive to left field. It's up into the wind. This one is long gone. Over the roof toward the batting cages.
There we go. Big shot from Casas. And before the game, Alex Cora mentioning that the opening day starter is set. It will be Garrett Crochet. A lot of action tonight. Celtics and Bruins and the Revs all in action. Celtics in Brooklyn to face the Nets. Tip time 6 p.m. Last check, Kristaps Porzingis probable. The 2 Jays questionable. Al Horford and Derek White doubtful. Bruins at home, they'll take on Tampa. Puck drop at 7. The Revs in New York to take on NYCFC at 7:30. NFL news also, KJ, coming in. Juju Smith-Schuster will go back to Kansas City.
Oh, you scared me for a second.
Not here. He's going back to KC. God.
Okay.
1 year deal. Falcons are keeping Kirk Cousins for now. They're going to pay him his $10 million roster bonus that was due if they kept him past 4 o'clock today. And, of course, I think you referenced this, the Cooper Kupp dream dying for Pats fans yesterday. He goes to Seattle. NCAA hoops action. Tomorrow, of course, the brackets are out. Bryant University, your America East champions, punched their tickets this morning. And tonight, 6:30 tip when KJ is finished on EEI, Creighton and St. John's for the Big East final, among many other games. Well, we got through that. And that's what's trending. That's what's trending.
Laird!
That is what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. It's KJ Carson on WEEI.
I'm not going to talk about any of the other players other than the ones that are right here and the ones that are going currently on our football team. We'll continue to target. Matt Collins will be in here tomorrow. He's a wide receiver. You know, but we'll continue to look at the wide receiver position as it relates through free agency, explore every option with other teams, and potentially, you know, then we'll get to the point where we're looking in the draft. And there's just a lot of time. And I know that everybody's like, it's over at free agency. It's never over.
That's pretty close. KJ here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. That is also the text line. That is, I'm just laughing when I think of Vrabel saying, you know, other people are going to be in here. Mac Hollins will be here tomorrow without his shoes. And yes, shoeless Mac Hollins was here. And I've even joked Fitzy that, hey, you can now reappropriate all that Mac gear that he did not sell out of his store, with Mac Hollins. Like, just repackage. But let's just call it what it is. The Patriots, their window to try and be aggressive is now. Not in a couple years. I mean, think about it. If I told you that the Patriots really have a shot to be the number two team in the AFC East, how real is it really that crazy? I mean, have you seen the pictures of Tua pretty much eating every pork barbecue sandwich and drinking every piece of alcohol in Miami? I'm just not a believer in Miami. The Jets? Oh, yeah. How did that Aaron Rodgers experiment work? Yeah, they're in a rebuild. The Jets are in a rebuild. They have Justin Fields as their quarterback now. You're telling me that that's a better feeling and situation than what New England could be going after? I think I need to have the hard conversation with some of the fan base right now. More money is proof that players aren't going to come just because you offer them more money. Let me walk you down memory lane, and we have a new memory lane person. Let's go back to DeAndre Hopkins, who I joked at the time only showed up to Foxborough just to look at Bill O'Brien in the face and just say, remember that Sports Illustrated article? Like, that possibly DeAndre Hopkins' grandma probably told him, go up there, be in the man's face. God says those who forgive are the ones who are forgiven, and you can be able to get over some things if you remember the Sports Illustrated article about the comparisons to his friends and Aaron Hernandez. I knew Hopkins wasn't going. And going back to what Albert Breer was saying, he said, quote, based on where it was, and this is about the Patriots and their offer to Hopkins, the Patriots didn't go to the levels that the Titans did, but the understanding was that the max of the Patriots' offer was $15 million for that first year. So they had matched what the Titans did for the year, but they were just asking for DeAndre Hopkins to do more. Maybe, I don't know, lead a forgiveness card? I don't know, but the Patriots offered the same money that the Titans did. It's just that the Titans asked him to do less to get that same money, and that's why he ended up in Tennessee, at least for that first year. Now, where Hopkins would be now and what he's going through now, and what totally different story. We're just talking about those who said no when the argument was, hey, well, you know, money shouldn't be the issue. And I'm skipping around because I'm not going to go in order. But these are just kind of the memorable ones. How about Brandon Ayuk, right? Remember when Ayuk was offered 3 years, $90 million, and it would have averaged 32.4 a year, and he ended up settling for 3 years at $30 million? It was still a no, even though it was the most money. Now, in hindsight, do you get rid of Ayuk? You don't know what the injury looks like. So at least for Hopkins and for Ayuk, the Patriots don't look so bad overspending in those situations because you don't even know what Ayuk is right now or what he will be. Now, Calvin Ridley, who'd be like, he's a bum, he went to Tennessee. Yeah, we know the story. Is when Robert Kraft says, you know, hey, look, there was one outstanding receiver that unfortunately we couldn't close. It wasn't because of finance, it was because he made clear his girlfriend wanted to be in the South. And we had a situation where the taxes were like almost 10% higher than Tennessee. And we offered and were willing to keep going to that premium, but he didn't want to be in the Northeast. Part of it might have been the quarterback situation as well. This is what Robert Kraft had said at the time. So Mason Rudolph was a more desirable situation than even trying to figure out Mac Jones for a year. But Ridley did have over 1,000 receiving yards. You just never saw like more than five of them. Then the two recent ones. Chris Godwin. Oh, the Patriots jumped out of their shoes and socks. 30 mil? 30 mil they offered him. He said yes to 22, no to 30. Fans, I need to have the conversation with you for a second. Just because you offer these players the most money doesn't mean they're going to say yes. Breaking news. Well, I'm breaking news. Cooper Kupp said no. He's going to Seattle. Seattle? What's in Seattle? Who do they? After Kenneth Walker III, can you tell me who's still in Seattle? Okay, Smith and Jigba. What else is left in Seattle? Like, If you know why Sam Darnold goes to Seattle? Because you can go hide in Seattle. Like the Sam Darnold that saw Ghost against the Patriots. Like, we started seeing that Sam Darnold, I don't know, the last two games he played. So Cooper Kupp believes better situation going to play with Sam Darnold than, hey, playing with Drake May. Now, people say, if you check out the Tom Carroll article at WEEI.com, it kind of goes into it. But in essence, Cooper Kupp takes $15 million, and the Patriots are somewhere where like in the 12, potentially. Right, what he was supposed to get in Los Angeles was like 12, and then 7 more for a signing bonus. So that's how his 19 number came. Some were saying, you know, how much did you give Aguilar? So all these guys are saying no. So when you're Mike Vrabel and you kind of get snappy, you're like, well, Mac Hollins is going to be here tomorrow. I say it's the setup frustration, right? People wondering, like I've told you, like if why is Elliot Wolf still there at least 3 or 4 days after you got rid of Jerod Mayo? Like, as bad as it was, like, as bad as it was. And then not speak a word from August until, what, the beginning of this month? Maybe writing a book. Maybe this is going to be a memoir. Like, The Season of Hell by Elliot Wolf. Why I went silent from August to February is because I had to write my thoughts before I said it. I don't know. But now you have a situation where I was saying last year when it was John Lyons and I doing a lot of shows, like, hey, we're all talking about how bad the offense is, but this defense is leaking oil badly. And as bad as things had been over the previous years, the Patriots never really had a defensive problem. It just became super exposed last season. And if it was the coaching, then I figured, wouldn't just the coaching change the situation? But you're changing at all three levels. Like, for those who are thinking, like, hey, the only people who really kind of keep, like, on defense is, like, Gonzalez and maybe Bentley. Kind of looking that way. What does it mean for Barmore? I mean, if you're going to a 3-4 with Vrabel, yeah, what does this mean? Because you know that White's going to take up one of those three spots. Because I don't think you're going to stand White up to rush the passer. I think you probably still want his hand in the ground, but you want him to come off the line more so than standing up at the edge. It's different than a Von Miller situation, you know? But the offense is so glaring right now. Like, what the deal that hurt me that said, huh, was the Larry Tunsil deal with Houston, with him going to Washington. Because now you probably have to ask yourself, gosh, what is Washington offering up? Like, just take Jaden Daniels out of the mix for a second, right? Because as well as Washington performed last year, Jaden Daniels was outstanding. There's no question about that. But it wasn't like there was chopped liver here. Like, it's all about building. But if you're able to make deals for things, like, did you really, like, the way that Washington played last year and some of those miracle plays, nothing jumped out at you and said, God, they really need a left tackle. You could have given Houston more. You could have given Houston your other third. You could have gave them your third this year because you have two from the Judon deal. So if you could say, we can give you the fourth pick in the third round, that's much. You could have given Houston what they gave up. I just wonder, and I know players won't say this out loud, but I think if there's anything close to it, is the Patriots coming in 31st out of 32 teams in overall scores by the players. What the conversation really is amongst these players about coming to New England, that money isn't the issue. So, yeah, you know, Kupp was offered $13 million. Seattle offered him $15 million, and the Patriots wouldn't go further than $13 million. Okay, so this is a rhetorical question. Do you have a collective of receivers in the room right now that you can value at $15 million? Here's why I ask that. And this is put in a car perspective, okay? The Yugo, right? The Yugo was this car that it's short for Yugoslavia. The Yugo was kind of designed for you to be able to save money. But the idea was, you know, don't go faster than 65 miles an hour in a Yugo, and you can save some gas. But see, what happens is you start to depend on that car because it's your main transportation. So when it breaks down, it kind of tell you, like, you know what? It's not even worth, like, paying for the parts. Either just buy another Yugo or think about your car options. Okay, I'm going to put this out there. You've got Yugos in the wide receiver room. Even a declining Cooper Cup is still better than any of the other cars you have in the shop. So $15 million isn't an overspend. In where we are right now, it's something different. So you're like, okay, do you jump too high to bring in a Davante Adams? And Davante Adams may not want to be here. I totally get you. You don't jump that high. I mean, you were willing to give Godwin almost $30 million. And I would say in terms of time and injury and so forth, I would say Godwin has about a 1.5 multiple better than Cooper Kupp moving the thing down the line. Again, Godwin's going to be coming off of this injury. So you don't know ultimately what you're going to get. And Godwin had an injury before that. Cooper Kupp has just been beat up and super overused. But to go to Seattle is like a push. So why couldn't you just make that push for another? I know you'll be like, we're not going to go send over $13 million. Oh, that's sexy. Again, I've always said, if I'm another team and the Patriots come running out on the field and I'm a defensive back, defensive coordinator, did I lose sleep last night having to worry about where somebody was? I don't know. It's his hometown. I mean, that's really good here for hockey. Unless this is Florida, Georgia, Alabama, that's the thing. You have to, either you're selling the product or you're being slept on or passed by. Like, come on. Ridley's girlfriend is the one that determines whether this guy can professionally perform for this team. Ridley, like I said, had 1,000 yards in Tennessee. Yeah, Tennessee beat the Patriots last year, but you don't think that Ridley and Drake May can't form something, considering that Ridley had been out of the league for a year, was coming back kind of rehashing an image. Like there's no control there. There's no control. You just make the deal happen. Godwin turning down, like, okay, so if that's the case, if it's hometown, so Godwin leaves $8 million a year on the table just because he likes it in Tampa. I mean, you can tell me the taxes, but the suck tax isn't that big of it. It's not $8 million he's leaving off the table if he comes here to Massachusetts. That's not the case. They have also at the WEEI.com, great article about how when the players were introduced, all on the defensive side. Well, you had an offensive lineman. Kind of looks like Kendrick Perkins. Doesn't Moses look like Kendrick Perkins? I think of like Keenan Thompson on Saturday Night Live. Maybe he'll end up doing a Moses impression if Moses becomes something big. But all of them mentioned playing for Vrabel. Okay, that's a defensive guy. I mean, what if he's like, hey, I want to play for Ben Johnson? Or they're getting offensive linemen. They've gotten a couple of them in Chicago. I mean, like, look what's happening in Chicago just because they got an offensive guy. I'm not saying Vrabel's the wrong choice. I'm not going down that path. Trust me. He's not the wrong choice. He's just the right choice for right now. There does need to be a culture reset. But what this also tells me is, people ain't believing so much in coming here who catch and receive and score the ball. You know, if we get the leather helmets, boy, the Patriots are going to be unstoppable. 617-779-7937. Keep your texts coming in as well. Let's go to Tim in Hanover. Tim, thanks so much for calling WEEI. Good Saturday to you, man.
KJ, you are the man.
Thank you.
With you on that whole note that you just talked about, because I'll tell you what, Cooper Kupp was the guy that they really should have grabbed. Look at what Matthew Stafford did with this guy all year long. Mr. Clutch for him. He had him in a lot of good situations. He's got great hands. Obviously, the other teams wanted him, and someone got him, but, I mean, he had multiple teams wanting him, and he's not going to fly away in 1 year. even if they get the 3-year 15. He's not the $30 million guy that Chase and all those other guys are looking for. Jefferson, those guys are up in that echelon where they want that money. This guy just wanted to get to a team and kind of keep going for the next 3 years and see what happens. But it's a shame that they didn't take him, because he could have did a lot for that team, because they don't have the power. I just hope and pray that they get a good receiver in this draft, one of the top five guys, and don't go off the rail and take some other player, defensive player or offensive lineman. Do that second. Get the receiver first.
Yeah, Tim, have a great Saturday. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for the call. Yeah, here's what's crazy. You know what Cooper Kupp did before he left the Rams? He helped develop Puka Nacua. Right, Puka Nacua is pretty much a guy that comes out of nowhere, but you don't think that when he sees the practice and habits of Cooper Kupp and says, you know what, that's who I'm going against every day in practice, not physically going up against, but this is the person that I've got to compliment on the field. This is the person that when attention turns to him, I've got to be on my game. You don't think that could help? Like, look, we talked this about Alex Bregman, what he's doing with the Red Sox and the young guys in the locker room. But Cooper Kupp couldn't do the same thing? Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you draft a rookie wide receiver, guess who the rookie has to learn from? The guys in the receiver room I've just been talking about. I don't know. I don't know about you. And Ken, you can tell me this, because if for those who are just joining, Ken Laird is actually my producer for this hour. But Ken, you can recognize there's a guy named John Maxwell. He has this book about leadership. It's like The Effective Leader in You 2.0. And in this book, it talks about how you develop leaders by being a servant. Right? So, like, right now, you are showing your leadership skills by instead of sticking somebody in here random, like, hey, buddy, you want a job at EEI? Just get over to the parkway and I'll show you the buttons, but I've got some Mai Tais I got to finish. No, you're showing leadership by stepping into the role and showing that you are a leader both from the front and literally in this situation behind.
Well, thank you, but it's either me or dead air, so pretty much.
Well,
there were no choices, but I'm happy to be here. But I appreciate that.
Well, the point that I'm getting to here, Kenley, this is so fun having my boss working on my behest. But the point I'm getting at is, if you don't know what good leadership looks like, how will you lead? Right? If you take someone like Edelman, right? When people talk about the question of Edelman, should he be in the Hall of Fame? It really goes back to, I'm a guy who was a quarterback in college. Not going to be a quarterback in the pros. But if I go ahead and start catching these balls from, watch this, the greatest quarterback of all time, there's at least an understanding that I have that I can step into his leadership and understand and be able to implement the things that he is trying to accomplish through his vision.
Well, I agree with everything you're saying, but Vrabel has to have a plan, right? What is his plan?
To not be Gerard Mayo?
But at receiver, they've got to have some kind of plan in the back pocket, right? He and McDaniels are not idiots, right? They've got to have something lined up.
Yeah, well, you know what they don't have lined up is the actual power of the pen, right? This is the whole narrative about the Crafts getting control back of the team, right? Because let's say Vrabel is the one that goes and gets Nelson Agholor to be the one receiver. What would you be screaming right now, right? So the Crafts don't have to worry about that. So I think what you see right now is that Vrabel can only go after what he has the expertise on, and that's on that defensive side of the ball, where he's going to get the immediate yes in that. But there you just saw where, like, okay, if Kupp wants 15, but the Patriots are not going to send over 13. Wait a minute. You were willing to do hell and earth for Brandon Ayuk, and that didn't happen. You were willing to do hell, earth, and the superstar planets and sonic booms of the world and universe for Chris Godwin. But you can't do $2 million more to get at least an effective leader in that receiving room? What would be the development improvement, at least if you have these guys? Like, Mac Hollins is a great piece, but I wouldn't be surprised if I'm not seeing Mac Hollins on special teams too. Like, is that what your top receivers are supposed to do? Don't give me the well. Because part of leadership is also allowing the people who are really talented to do what they do. Right? Yeah,
it's all good points. Maybe Jacoby Myers? Maybe a trade? Maybe they know more about A.J. Brown than we think? I don't know. It is head-scratching.
What would be funny about the Jacoby Myers thing is, what was the hang-up over him? $1 million?
Right.
His number was 11? You think he's coming here for 11? He's going to be about 17 to 20. So now the guy that you could have had here and still on that same contract at this point, because you would have given Myers 3 years. So this would be his final year. So with Myers, you could say either he's leaving and we know what we need to replace, but he would have most likely been the leader in the locker room. But no, you've got to say, gosh, we've got to go back. And anybody who's worked at a job, I don't know if they do this anymore. Ken, don't answer this question. But let's just say I leave here and they're like, KJ, we need you to come back. Yesterday's price is not today's price. So you're going to be losing money as a franchise trying to bring Jacoby Myers back when you could have had him already. So, again, those who have listened early, I don't know how deep the archives go. I really think this is a kick the can down the road play by Kraft via Wolf with Cowden and with Vrabel in the shadows, right? If it goes wrong this year, then that's going to be on Elliott Wolf, and the fans, none the wiser, will see. We told you. But Elliott Wolf so far is like, okay, I've given you what you want. I offered Curtis Godwin my firstborn and all the money he wanted, and he said no. So, yeah, it's fascinating how it's playing out, because the ultimate things that you need are nowhere close to getting. And I've said, if you've got to say, well, we've got to get on the draft, ask any player in the NFL, how much NFL experience does a brand new draft pick have? The answer is zero. Just because you're drafted high or you look sexy on tape, as you hear me say it all the time, this might be my calling card. If you want to know what sexy looks like with no return in the bedroom, go look at N'Keal Harry's last year at Arizona State tape. You would have thought it was Randy Moss with the body of Karl Malone out there. It was ridiculous. Amounted to zero. On the text line, 617-779-7937. Just a little heads up, Ken. When I'm here, the producer reads the text. Oh. But that's fine. Look, I'd rather have Travis Hunter as wide receiver one. Watch this. What if Travis Hunter is better as a third down corner than he is a receiver?
Why not both?
Who in the NFL is both? Even Charles Woodson barely played receiver when he got to the NFL, and Charles Woodson was one of the... I wouldn't say he was as good as Travis Hunter as receiver, but Charles Woodson was a damn great receiver. Deion Sanders barely played wide receiver when he came to the league. So it all depends on what you need. So would Travis Hunter be one of the top wide receivers in the league just strictly playing receiver? Because you really wouldn't need him as cornerback here. Would you play him at cornerback? No. But someone might say, hey, we need you as a corner and maybe include you in a wide receiver package. This kind of goes to that leadership thing that I talk about what is the one thing you're great at and be great at that. I don't need you to be good at wide receiver, especially when it's 4th and 10 and this determines whether the coach is getting fired. We're going to throw the ball to the good receiver. And at the same time, I don't need you being just a good cornerback lined up against Justin Jefferson on a 3rd and 10 to determine what's going to happen next week. Wherever he's great is where he's going to be. So I can see you saying, I would rather have Travis Hunter as wide receiver one. I could kind of argue that. You can't necessarily say that Travis Hunter is better than the wide receivers in the room right now until you know he's been able to perform at the NFL level. I know, KJ, that sounds dumb. What are you saying? He hasn't played an NFL game. You don't know what happens to people when they get to the NFL. It's not a guaranteed success. If you want history, go research the name Tony Mandridge. Ken, you remember that name, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Tony Mandridge was supposed to be the guy that, like, hey, you think AI and robots are big? They thought that Mandridge could just be the one guy that played the whole left side. That's how dominant he was. Fizzled before it even started. So you don't want that to happen. I'll tell you what. When I come back from break, we'll get to more of your text. 617-779-7937. I might do Would You Rather more likely to either or next break. That's coming, but I'm going to continue the Patriots talk because I've got to get to this Milton Williams signing and what it reminds me of this same position, same type of situation, and what that outcome was with that defensive tackle with the Patriots. That's next here on WEEI.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. It's KJ Carson on WEEI.
Yeah. KJ WEEI, 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. We'll get to your text in about 2 minutes here. you missed any of the show, if you want to call it that, it's more like a ranting. The Odyssey app is free. And what's really neat, just type in WEEI, brings you right to the page. Actually, clicked a little, you could save it, but you can also leave a message and send a voice message. I don't want to do any kayfabe here of how those messages sometimes get repurposed here on WEEI, but it's your chance to talk to the station. Carefully, right? Be careful what you say because it's still FCC regulated stuff. But you can talk to the station through the app. It's free. Odyssey app, AUDACY. So for those who are just joining, also the big surprise is that Ken Laird is working my show as my producer. I will never say my boss is behind the glass, but Ken, remember when we were over on 20 Guest Street? You remember the first time met? It was kind of awkward when I look back at it because the way our offices were construed at the time, I was doing mornings for an R&B station, and you remember it used to be in the broom closet. Remember this, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so down the hall, there's with Ken and Curtis, because Curtis was always letting me in when I forgot my badge. And I did have one morning in an elevator with LB. It was kind of a life-changing experience at the time. So all in this little surrounded area down at the end of the hallway was kind of like the newsroom, right? And so one day I just randomly walk into the newsroom, and I just like, hey, Ken, nice to meet you. My name is Ken, too. And you were like, cool. And I said, you know, it means handsome one. And I'm thinking, maybe that was not the move right there at that time.
I didn't take it that way. I mean, either way, good. I'm good.
Because I've lost sleep about that. I've gone to several counseling sessions about it. Like, do you think this has cost me anything by telling my boss that his name means handsome one, which is my name, too? And they said, no, you know, you're just trying to make conversation and so forth. And probably a better way of conversation, I could have come in and said, hey, Ken, did you see the amazing football match between Green Bay and the Giants of New York? You know,
we had more employees in those days. It felt more fraternal most of the time.
You missed the Coming to America reference.
Oh,
son,
I did, sorry.
Whatever you ever do in this life, stay off those drugs. You know, you know what's crazy about that scene in Coming to America where Eddie Murphy says, did you see the amazing, exhilarating football match between the Giants of Green Bay, the Packers of Green Bay and the Giants of New York? Like 2 years ago, almost literally the way Akeem described it in Coming to America was how the Green Bay Giants game played out on Monday night like a couple years ago. They're calling it like the Akeem game. Like 30 years later.
I did not see the sequel. Was that any good?
The sequel wasn't that bad. It wasn't as memorable with its lines, right? Because there's so many. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you know about this. When Eddie Murphy wrote the treatment for Coming to America, he only wrote 15 pages, and they greenlit it. They said yes. 15 pages.
Good
All
choice.
He wrote was, he just wrote the very beginning, the first 15 minutes of the movie is what he wrote. They said yes, greenlit the movie, the rest is history. So, but part two, I think because we're in a society now where you can watch movies at home, like I can watch Deadpool versus Wolverine in my house now for the last 3 months. You know, like, why would I have gone to the movies at this point? You know, so, yeah. And I think that's the same thing with Coming to America, too, is that, look, it doesn't have the same effect of going to the movie and laughing at the little things and watching the barbershop scene and, you know, 80-foot screen and stuff like that. So it's a bit different. If you missed any of the conversation, we've talked Red Sox and the Devers. Return today in spring training. We'll get to more of the conversation regarding the Patriots. We talked about the wide receiver situation. I've got to get to the Milton Williams situation here shortly. 617-779-7937. A minute away from would you rather, more likely to, either or. Ken, what do you have on the text line?
All right, so this from a 508 texter. I believe Vrabel is in Bill B mode. He thinks the quarterback and the offense don't matter. Anybody can do the job. Same management philosophy and belief the defense is king.
Except for remember the last 3 years of Bill B mode, where the quarterback didn't matter and the offense suffered, and look what you got. Like, this is what's crazy to think. The most productive years of the last 3 years of the Patriots were when Patricia and Judge were running the offense. That's almost disgusting to think. That's how bad it's been. So, look, I think he wants to be in Bill B mode, but Kraft is going to remind him that Bill B had control for all those years. You don't. I'm going to control the spending. And I think maybe the first leakage that we saw is, okay, yeah, Godwin won't take all that money, but you won't give enough money to Cooper Kupp, and it's only by a million or two. So I think this is really the beginning of the Kraft years, the real Kraft control years that you never really saw at the early, because right, think about it. What Kraft buys the team, Pete Carroll, the Parcells doesn't work out, him and Parcells bumps head. Pete Carroll comes, doesn't work out. Belichick is here, and then within a couple of years, Belichick has control. So really, the Krafts never really had their foot, their fingerprints on this franchise, other than they were loved for not having the games in Hartford, right? One more text, and then we'll get to Would You Rather. What
all right.
You got?
Well, this leads into that 978 texter. You've still got trades and trades on draft night. So basically, you know, if you can't sign them, can't write the check, trade for them.
I get that, but then it's like Christmas night, Christmas Eve, right? Your family has a set budget. Hey, let's just say they're prudent and no one, you can't get what you want. Like you can't have it all. So what you would hope for, like the most desirous trade, I think that would be out there for the Patriots. And I've said this, at all costs, do it. If the Bengals decide to trade Ja'Marr Chase, you give up that number 4. And then you figure out the money because you have all the money in the world. Why? Because the Bengals are a cheap organization, how they operate. Right, so you actually, if you want to find a guy like T. Higgins or Ja'Marr Chase or something like, or someone like that,
Ayuk.
But Ayuk, why is he's kind of damaged goods? Would you give him all that money?
Not the 4th, no.
Right. So again, where the Larry Tunsil deal, where it took a 4th, I was like, well, you had 2/3. Were you on the phone with Houston? I mean, hello, there's a guy who's leading prayer requests down there that you've had a previous relationship with. You can't get him on the phone? Because if you need a left tackle who's established in the NFL, it allows you to sleep very well about what you want to do in the draft and everything. Because you talk about Campbell or is it Banks? And it's like, well, what if those guys don't work out? Then how is it going to look any different than what Jacoby Brissett went through and what Drake May ran away from? Like that's the, if you can solve that, I don't know if you solve that so much in the draft as much as you get it with an established player. And if a guy can get traded that way, if you're talking about there's still trades, I want to hear for a trade for one of the two tackles that they've got, and they've got two left tackles sitting out there in with the Chargers. You don't draft Joe Alt, who probably is going to be a legendary left tackle, and play him at right tackle for the rest of his life. Like at some point, he's being moved to left tackle. So if you get a trade on draft night for a left tackle that's established themselves in the NFL, then I could sleep at night about everything else. But the big receiver, it's got to be a cheap team that doesn't want to pay people, and the only people I can think of, and that's the Bengals. And I don't know I think the Bengals are more likely to keep T. Higgins because they have him under control than with Ja'Marr Chase thinking of the control that they have to, that they'll lose again next year. All right, Ken, you ready to do this?
Okay.
Hit it. Yeah! My boss is going to have me because I'm doing horrible the time here.
you rather more like the two. Either or, I ask of you. Would you rather more like the two? Either or, I ask of you.
All right, 3 questions. Would you rather, more likely to happen, and either or. They can be in anything, sports, life. Here we go.
All right, and then do I take over at this point?
This is where you enter
in. All right. Would you rather, KJ, the Patriots give up a 3rd-round pick for a top-line left tackle on draft night, or take Campbell at 4?
Yeah, this is what I was just saying. What do you know? It happens to be the first question we walk into. The synchronicity of the police, right? Look, give up that extra 3rd-rounder, especially if it's at the top, right? Because you don't know what other teams are desperate to look for. At that point, like there's going to be a couple of players that teams miss out on, and they're going to have to try and overcompensate as early as possible. I think it may even be at the running back position, right? For some reason, I have that idea. And if you're the Patriots, say, well, look, if we keep the Atlanta pick, it's still within the top 15 inside the 3rd round. Give up that 3rd-rounder, get an established left tackle, give up your future picks, because Campbell may not work out. Like Cole Strange is about to be the center. Like, if Cole Strange, at 4 years from now, Cole Strange could be a tight end at this point if you keep moving him down the line. All right, next.
Next, more likely to happen.
Okay.
Rafi Devers gets off to a slow start this year at the plate, or Alex Bregman gets off to a slow start at the plate.
Well, they say history is a predictor of future events. Alex Bregman is historically known for starting slow, so I think it's going to be, that he's not getting these at-bats that he probably should have gotten during spring training, but it's probably best that he didn't, because if he goes 4-for-5 in one spring training game and then goes off to the media saying, and I could do this playing third base too, oh gosh. But I think Bregman, who historically has suffered, with new dimensions, increased weather going on early in the season, I think Bregman gets off to a slow start. But the other side of it, Bregman is known to take off in July and August. And if he's taking off in July and August and the Sox are still in it, that's what you got Bregman for.
All right, one last one. Either or.
Uh-oh.
Either go 999th in the Bonnie Blue draft or party around Cambridge with the Joe Bros.
Oh, yeah, but one's legal and the one has been determined to be illegal. So me being a compliance guy, woo, as tough as I'd have to say this, I would rather go 999th in the Bonnie Blue draft than to get rounded up in Cambridge hanging out with the Joe Bros, because I may be a free sick man, but I don't want to be an imprisoned sick man. So that is, would you rather, more likely to, either or. Ken, thank you so much for your service this hour as a great leader.
You're welcome.
And talk to you again here in minutes here on WEEI.